Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is business without busyness and the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving and just have a conversation exploring this idea of what would it be like to be in business without being busy, without being caught up in busyness. Our 866-254-1579, that's toll free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. And from outside the United States, according to the guy who just spoke in a really deep radio voice before me, you're supposed to dial your country code followed by 760-918-4300. If that's true, I may have been giving out the wrong number for the last year. So I'm going to check that with the guys in studio, but I'm going to trust the guy with the radio voice. You got to always trust a guy with a radio voice. So 001-760-918-4300 from outside the United States. And before I go to your calls, I want to kind of set the table and talk about this idea of business without busyness. And in a way, the idea for this particular show came from a conversation I had with Jack Canfield. And those of you who don't know Jack, and I think most people know Jack. In fact, I think a lot more people know Jack and wonder who I am. But Jack wrote the Chicken Soup for the Soul books and has written the Success Principles and is sort of a giant in the transformative, transformational industry. And I asked him, kind of as we were just making small talk before our interview, I said, are you busy at the moment? And he stopped, he thought, and he said, well, I've got a lot on, but I'm not particularly busy. And I really liked that answer because I knew what he meant. There are times where I have a very full calendar, but I don't feel busy at all because I'm very much operating in the present moment. I'm just where I am. I'm just dealing with what's in front of me now. There's really only one thing I have to do today, and that's whatever I'm doing right now. And then there are other times where I may or may not have a lot of things on my to-do list. I may or may not have a lot of things on my calendar. But man, am I busy. And the absolute most extreme version of that I've ever experienced is years ago, and some of you may know this story. I think I told it once before, but it may have been like 7 years ago. So you're going to be pretty hardcore if you've heard this story before. But I'd read a book by Stephen Covey. Again, most of you will know the book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And there was a story in there where he was working at a university and he wanted the head of the university to help him make some project happen. And the head of the university laid out his diary for Stephen and his project list and said, you know, which was completely full, and said to him, Stephen, I totally respect this project. I have a lot of time for what you're up to. Which of these things would you like me to take off my calendar to put your project on? And the way Covey talks about it was he was humbled and he saw that, oh my God, of course that's, you know, and I'll just own my stuff and this is great. Well, that may or may not have been how it went down, but see, I somehow thought this would be a good thing to try with my wife. So I was feeling incredibly busy. Like I had so much to do and we had young kids and she was feeling incredibly busy. Like she had so much to do and she was asking me to take time away from my busy work schedule to help out more with the kids. And I thought, well, I'll just do what Stephen Covey did. I'll make a list of all the things that I'm doing and all my projects and lay out how much of my time is being spent on each thing. And I'll ask her which of the things that I do to support us as a family she would like me to stop doing so that I can help her with the kids. This really did look like a good idea to me at the time. I don't know what I was thinking. Anyways, here's what happened. I made my list. And to my horror, it turned out that I only had about 2 hours worth of work a day. And the rest of my time was being spent thinking about it, worrying about it, preparing for it, trying to get into the right state of mind for it, trying to deal with the aftermath of having done it. Now, I really genuinely didn't know that. Up until I laid it all out on paper, I really thought I was incredibly busy and I had a ton to do. Well, I was suitably humbled. I started helping out more with the kids. And over time, my business developed and I did wind up with a much fuller schedule. And there are times, and I'm in one of those times right now. I've been back, I was teaching a program up in Laconia, Washington over the Labor Day weekend called the Entrepreneurial Advantage. And it was the first 3 days of a 12-week program. And it was wonderful, but it was very full on. And I came back and looked at my calendar and I went, I'm teaching? I've got a seminar? I've got a client flying in from the UK? We're putting on a Taste of Super Coach Academy week-long online symposium, and I haven't invited anybody? Like, suddenly, I looked at my calendar and I realized I had quite a lot on. But what's interesting is, except for about an hour yesterday where I got busy because I got up in my head thinking about all the things I had to do, I wasn't struck with busyness. I just realized I had a lot of business to take care of. Apparently, that was one of Elvis's favorite things to say. Whenever people would ask him what he was up to, was taking care of business just as fast as I can. TCOB. I don't know if that's a good Elvis or a bad Elvis, but actually it'd be quite fun if there was a good Elvis and a bad Elvis, and you had like a good Elvis on one shoulder singing to you about what you should do with your life and a bad Elvis on the other shoulder, I'm not going to go there. Anyways, numbers to call to get me off of the good Elvis, bad Elvis debate. 1-866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing your country code followed by 760-918-4300. We posted a little quote on Facebook. And you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/MNeil, N-E-I-L-L. And in announcing the show, we posted this little piece, which is from one of my favorite books, a book called The Tao of Pooh by Benjamin Hoff. And what Benjamin Hoff does is he takes bits of Winnie the Pooh and sort of uses them to share life lessons. And this is a little excerpt. The main problem with this great obsession for saving time is very simple. You can't save time. You can only spend it wisely or foolishly. The busy Baxen, those of you who don't know your poo will not know what a busy Baxen is, but if you know your poo, the busy Baxen has practically no time at all because he's too busy wasting it by trying to save it. And by trying to save it, he ends up wasting the whole thing. We're designed as human beings to function incredibly well without much on our minds, in a relatively clear state of mind. And we're able to function just about when our minds are full. And there comes a certain point where our minds are so full that we really can't function at all. Now, when our minds get full, the feeling of a full mind is busyness, sometimes stress, sometimes pressure, sometimes overwhelm. That's what a mind with a lot of thought going on feels like. And that's true, by the way, even if those thoughts are relatively positive, right? A mind full of positive thoughts is just as prone to overwhelm and just as closed to in-the-moment wisdom as a mind full of negative thoughts. It feels better, but it can turn on a dime. Those positive thoughts can turn negative, and if your head is full, you're up against it. And when your head empties back out, when your perception expands, your awareness expands, so that thought is still present, thought's always present. We're dead when there's no thought. That's one of the ways they measure is there's no brain activity. That's how they know you're dead. Even if the heart has stopped pumping, if there's still brain activity, there's still a chance. But when your mind is relatively clear and open, when there is no busyness in your mind, you're open to the kind of wisdom that helps you do really, really well at business and, in fact, at anything in life that you might want to do well in. And so it's an interesting thing that we misinterpret that signal. And when we feel busy, when we feel overwhelmed, our solution is to try and get better at time management. So the source of our problem, the source of the feeling of busyness, is excessive thought. But the way we try to address it is by managing time, not by managing our own heads. Now, the reason that it sometimes seems to work is because when we get a time management system in place, actually, let me back it up. The minute we decide to get a time management system in place, that takes some thinking off our mind. Because we go, oh, okay, I'm going to take care of this. I don't have to worry about it now because I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to study this time management system or that time management system. And immediately, we feel less busy. We have less on our mind. And so we think, hey, it's working already and I haven't even learned it. This is great. And then we learn the system. And let's say we learn getting things done, the Dave Allen system, and we write everything down. We write down literally every single activity and every single project and every single thing that we might have to do. And we get it out of our head and onto paper. And we feel great because now we don't feel like we have to hold those thoughts in mind. So our mind is clear. And when our mind is clear and open, we're naturally at our most effective. We're naturally at our most perceptive. We're naturally at our most creative. And we think, wow, what a great time management system. But then if our mind revs back up, we try to work our system harder or find a better system, never noticing that what makes us feel too busy, overwhelmed, or not too busy, but maybe with a lot on, not overwhelmed, but maybe with a full calendar, is our own clarity of mind. It's the spaciousness we find within ourselves. And it's a really interesting thing. I was joking with one of the women who works with me today, you know, who's, you know, saying that, you know, she was feeling a lot of pressure to get a project done on time. And I knew what she meant because, to be fair, I hadn't really given her enough time to get the project done on time. but my response, and it was joking, was, you know, I'm sure pressure only exists as an internally generated thought created phenomenon independent of circumstance. Now, you might say I was being a dick, and in some ways perhaps I was, except for the fact that I think we both laughed. But the truth is, pressure only exists as an internally generated thought created phenomenon independent of circumstance. The truth is, there's no such thing as time pressure. There are only thoughts that we have about time that create a feeling of pressure in our nervous system. Well, that's a really different thing, isn't it? That's an absolutely different problem to have. See, if I think I have a time problem, then I have to find more time. And last time I checked, there's only 24 hours in a day. So if I have a time problem and I need to find more time, I have to take it from one place to put it in another. I have to take it away from one thing and give it to another, like in the Stephen Covey story, or like in the story of what I thought I was going to be able to do with my wife before I realized I was being an idiot. But if I have a thought problem, well, I have an infinite capacity for thought. And mind is an infinitely capacious space. So we're no longer dealing with a limited quantity. We're no longer trying to move one thing to get another and make space for this by getting rid of that. Now, it's a whole different game. Now, I don't have to change anything in my world to get to solve my busyness problem. But here's what happens. When I solve my busyness problem, when I reconnect to my clarity of mind, when I find the spaciousness within, I may notice that I've overloaded my schedule. I may notice that I've bit off more than I can chew. I may see that I'm just trying to get too much done in too little time. Now, if I work for myself, then I can do something about that quite easily. And it's not a big deal. Just reprioritize things. And in fact, you do this all the time. I can guarantee you do this all the time, whether you work for yourself or not. The day before you go on a trip, suddenly your to-do list gets trimmed down to just the essentials. And whereas you may have thought you had 40 things to do, if you're going on a flight the next day or on a big trip the next day, you'll get done the most important 3 or 5 or 7 or 12. Right? You, at some point, that plane ticket becomes a sufficiently deadline that you drop the thought-created activities and just focus on the tasks at hand. Now, if you don't work for yourself, what do you do then? Well, I had an interesting, I've been doing for years, I'm actually about to change this, but I have been running, I think since 2010, 2011, I've been doing these three-day retreats called Time to Thrive. Actually, they used to be called Learning How to Thrive. I've done them all over the world. I'm going to do the last one this December in Hong Kong. You can find out more at supercoach.com/thrive. But I was doing a Thrive retreat in Sydney, in Australia. And I was talking about the nature of the mind and the nature of thought and how well we do with clarity of mind and how much we struggle when our mind is full. And about the inside-out nature of that experience of busyness, that it's not a function of your schedule or responsibilities, just like pressure isn't a function of anything other than your thinking, right? It's an independent variable. Well, I'm talking to the group, and the group on the whole they really see it. They're really responsive, but one woman, she's just glaring at me a lot. And so in the break, I took her aside and I said, "Hey, what's going on?" And she said, "Well, you don't understand my situation." And I said, "Okay, well, explain it to me." And she said, "Well, I promise you that if you were in my situation, you would feel pressure. You would feel stressed because my situation is untenable. I'm just busy. It's not my thinking." So I said, "Okay, let's meet at lunch so we have a little more time. And let's talk me through it." So we met at lunch and she went for it. She created on the flip chart a full org chart for her organization, where she was in the org chart, and she had two bosses, and then both the bosses funneled everything through her. So it was like being COO of two companies simultaneously with the same resource base and differing objectives. And when she first laid it out, all the people who she was responsible for, who had to report back to her, and this structure where she had the two bosses, initially I could feel myself going, "Oh my God, this sounds..." And then at a certain point, I looked at her org chart and I just laughed. And I said, "Nope, I would not feel pressured most of the time. I would not feel stressed if I was in your position." And she said, "How can you say that?" And I said, "Because I would know that it was impossible to do the job I was being asked to do. And I would simply do the best that I could within the impossible structure I'd been given. Now, she actually got that. You could see her whole face change. See, she had thought that if only she was better at management, at time management, at people management, at relationship skills, at rapport skills, at manipulating her bosses, at, you know, more efficient at email, right? She had thought if she could just get 16 more strategies in place to manage her time, she'd be able to do that job. And so she continually was up in her head trying to work it out, trying to work it out, trying to work it out. Well, the second she saw that she was just in an untenable situation, all that thinking went away. And when it came back, because it does, right? It didn't look as real to her anymore. It didn't look like she had to reckon with it. It just looked like thought. And the great thing about thought is it comes and it goes. It's like clouds. They come, they go. Sometimes they leave behind some rain or snow. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they can seem so huge that they block out the sun. But you know the sun's still there. And you know the cloud's not going to be there forever. And it's the same with thought. Within the sky of our consciousness, that's all thought is. Comes and it goes. And so suddenly she was able to go back to the exact same job without the pressure, without the stress. Now, as it happens, I sometimes get to follow up with people at great length. Sometimes I only follow up a little bit with people from these retreats. And I don't know where she's at right now. I know that when I spoke to her again a month later, she had a completely different experience of her work. And she was actually beginning to make some inroads into getting them to change the structure because it was a fundamentally flawed structure. And sometimes that's just what you're up against. But she was able to make those changes in her business because she was able to get herself out of her busyness. And that's just a fundamentally different thing. So I got more to say, but if you want to say something, if you want to jump in, numbers to call 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada, outside the U.S. 001-760-918-4300. And I want to mention a couple of things. I very quickly mentioned this online symposium coming up called A Taste of Supercoach Academy. And you'll actually be able to sign up for it. I think the page is already up. And if it isn't, it will be really soon. And you can go to supercoachacademy.com/taste. And that should get you there. It's basically going to be 5 days where we're going to be exploring this inside-out understanding that we explore on the show, and it's free. You just have to sign up. And we're going to be exploring how does a deeper understanding change lives. And so we're going to be doing five days. We're going to start each day, starting on Monday, the 21st of September. We're going to be looking at an inside approach to coaching others. And it's going to be me. I'm going to be on all the calls. Sarah Murr, who's our director of community engagement, is going to be on all the calls. And graduates and teachers from Supercoach Academy are going to be on all the calls. And we're going to explore this understanding in different contexts. So on the Monday, we're going to look at it in the context of coaching others. On the Tuesday, we're going to look at bringing it into your career. On the Wednesday, we're going to look at it in three very different fields, recovery, medicine, and education. But what those fields have in common is they're all fields where there is a very established norm, where you might say it feels like you're up against people who think that things should be done the way they've always been done, and how this understanding can begin to bring you greater fluidity in there. On the Thursday, we're going to be talking about transforming companies. We're going to be talking about business. And on the Friday, I've brought in a panel, and what I love in a way about this panel is none of them may be able to be here because they might all be involved in helping people with real problems, which is what we're going to be talking about on Friday, about helping people deal with suffering and poverty and abuse and neglect and war, and how this understanding that we talk about each week of the mind and of consciousness and of thought lets you impact the world even at that level. So if you want to sign up for that, it's completely free, and you can go to supercoachacademy.com/taste, and you will find the registration form there. So let's go to Queens, New York, and let's talk to Laura. Laura, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hey, Michael. Hey. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
It is about time, but it isn't. I have a lot of time, and I have things to get done that I can't seem to start. And I think I've spoken to you throughout the year one time about this. And I've got to get started on my son is 17, and he's got to apply to all these colleges, which is quite a process. And I don't know if you've experienced it yet.
I have experienced it two times. Yes, in great detail.
Yeah, it's an incredible process, and I know I just started my third course with Martin Inside Out, and I understand that I can't change the way that it is. I can't change the process. I can't change the numbers of schools there are and which ones my son should apply to. I can't change that I don't financially afford, I can't really afford this. I've got to take the steps where I've got to fill out forms. I've got to do some research. And my son is 17 and he's played his ball. And, you know, I'm told, well, he's got to do the work too, which he is. But I have a lot of work to do. And I don't have a lot of time where the deadline is concerned. But during the day, I have time. And I don't want to read into, oh my goodness, I'm screaming on the street. It's the fear in back of it. I don't want to read into it that I'm afraid.
Let me interrupt you for a minute, Laura, because there's something I'm not quite clear on, which is, and this may seem obvious to you, and it may be, and I may just be being a little bit thick, but I understand why is it your son who's applying?
Yes.
Yeah, I understand why he might be feeling a bit overwhelmed, but why do you?
Because I have to do the work, and I've got to push him to do the work, and I've got to push the trips to go look at schools. It's all a push, okay. And my husband is not helpful in this.
Because I know you've listened to the show before, I kind of take it on faith that you're going to forgive me if I say something stupid. So I'm just going to kind of say what I'm thinking.
Okay.
All right. What do you see that you're taking that on? It's not like in some divine order, it was foretold, lo, come the 15th year of the 21st century, all mothers must push their sons to fill out college applications or the natural order of the universe will be destroyed.
I do know I'm taking it on.
Okay.
There's no question.
So stay with me. All right. So if you choose to take that on, which, by the way, I have no strong opinion about for or against. With one of my kids, I kind of did. With one of my kids, I totally didn't. Okay? Why would you take it on in a way that overwhelms you?
Because it is an overwhelming process.
Do you think every parent finds it an overwhelming process?
Yes.
Okay.
I was at meetings at school and they're all, you should see the faces on all the parents.
Okay. So let me tell you about the difference between my experience of this with one of my kids and my experience of this with another one of my kids.
Great. Okay?
So with our first, our firstborn, When he was going through this application process, it really seemed to me like he was going to be fine no matter what. So I wanted him, I personally have a bias, like we all were university educated, and I have a bias towards that. So I wanted him to do that. My wife wanted him to do that. But it was easy for me to see that his future in life, his future happiness, his future well-being, his future ability to contribute was not dependent on which school he got into or how he did when he got there. It would be neat. It would be cool. I thought it was a good idea. But it was just very apparent to me that if he didn't want to do it, it wasn't going to be great for him. And if he did want to do it, it could be great for him. So I very much made myself available to him as a resource. And I said, hey, you need anything, I will make myself as available as I can to support you in doing research, with your applications, with trips. And in the end, he did do a lot of it himself. I helped him a bit with his essays, and we had the most awesome road trip where we rented a Mustang convertible and flew up to Seattle and drove from the Space Needle all the way down to LA, stopping off at a bunch of universities along the way. Now, that was one experience. Now, when my daughter was applying, I was up in my head, and it was not obvious to me that she was going to be okay. And there were times where I was thinking, oh my God, if we don't find a school for her, it's all going to go to crap. And I would get overwhelmed about it. And I would start trying to force her to do the application. Have you done the application yet? Have you done the application? Have you applied to, are you really, you're only going to apply to those schools? You're not. And then at some point it dawned on me that my problem was I was believing my thinking. I was starting to believe that the pictures I was making in my head of home, my daughter as a homeless bag woman who didn't get into university were a little bit far-fetched and were a little bit overreaching my knowledge of how the universe unfolds. And what was interesting was, as soon as I relaxed into the truth of the fact that our well-being is not dependent on which university we go to, the whole thing didn't seem overwhelming anymore. Now, it still took time. It still cost money because we wanted her to be able to visit the schools, and I had to rearrange my schedule, and my wife was finally able to do one of the trips, and I did one of the trips, et cetera, et cetera. But from the moment my thinking changed, it stopped feeling overwhelming, even though there was no less work involved. Now, tell me for you, because I can understand if you listen to that story and go, bully for you anyways. But what do you hear in that?
I believe that my son will be okay wherever he'll wind up. I have heard enough. I've gone to seminars where, you know, the school you get into doesn't define who you are. It doesn't define your future. My son's college advisor says, the next most important thing is who you marry, and that's what your life is going to be like. And I understand all that. But I also understand that my son is 17 and he has limited understanding and capability of carrying it out on his own. And I went to a meeting the other night and the college advisor explained how you actually apply to each of these schools and the attachments and the packages and the financial, if you do early decision, if you do early action, if you do, and I don't even have a list of schools that we will apply to. So I do know from listening to you and courses in my life, this kid is a great kid. And I know he'll be okay. I have to do the work as his parent. And it's hard for me to.
So let me ask you a different question, Laura. Let me ask you a different question. Have you flown? I don't mean this to be a silly question, but have you flown on a plane?
Yes.
Okay.
Not a long time because I can't afford to go on vacation anymore, but yeah.
All right. Well, you know the thing that they always say to the point where you stop hearing it about, in case of an emergency, always put your own oxygen mask on first before assisting a child.
Oh, I know what you're going to say. Yeah.
There's a reason for that. It's because we're not much use when we overwhelm ourselves.
Mm.
Now, I get your love for your son. I get your faith in your son. I get the care you have and your desire to really support him. But basically what you're doing is, I love you so much, I'm going to chop off my leg to try and win the race so that you get the prize. Which just sounds like a bad plan.
Did your children wind up in schools that they liked?
Yeah, actually, as it happened, and in one case, to our surprise, they absolutely love the schools that they're in. So you clearly heard something in there, Laura. Just share with me a little bit what you heard.
What I heard is, I got to stand up, man. I have to stand up and do this. Because if I'm not functioning, he's going to feel that. I mean, he feels my anxiety already, and he's going to feel it. I have to, as his parent, I have to be strong and hide where the overwhelming part of it, because for sure these kids are overwhelmed. For sure they're worried. For sure all they can think about is, am I going to get a job when I get out of school? I mean, all of this is so programmed, and for sure they know the amount of money it costs. And I must just be clear and know that he's going to wind up in the right place. I just got to do my work, and that's it. And that's it. That's what it is. I just can't seem, as of today, which is the 10th of September, have not been able to do it. And that's what I hear. What do you hear from me?
Well, two things. One is, I hear a recognition that doing the work isn't necessarily doing the best for your kid. That the way you do it and the feeling state that you're in relation to it is going to impact him as much as doing the work. So I hear that you hear that. And it reminds me of, at one point, my son said to my wife and I, when we were talking about his future, he said, you know, you two are the only people in my life who aren't telling me I have to figure this out and get it right. And I felt really good about taking that job on, because I know that to be true. But the other thing I heard, and I'm just going to kind of give you this as a parting ponder, something to kind of take away and let float around inside and see what it does, is that while at one level, yeah, you know, you might not be doing the greatest service, you know, to your kid when you share your anxiety with him, I'm going to tell you that it is completely possible for you to do a bang up job supporting him in getting into a good school without experiencing it as overwhelming. And I can just tell you that as a truth, but I want to kind of leave it with you to float around in there. And I would love for you to pop back on at some point and just share what your experience was. Would you be willing to do that?
Yes, thank you very much. I will. Attached to that, we talked about attaching to thoughts.
Yeah,
and I will attach to that thought.
Very cool.
And I appreciate it, Michael. Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're
so
very
much.
Welcome, Laura.
Okay, take care.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Anytime. Okay. So, hey, look, if you're listening to that, there's so much in there, and you could hear. I'm sure you could hear that this is all coming from love, right? This isn't a drama queen, right? This isn't somebody who wants to make themselves important by appearing busy, because sometimes that's what it is, right? I know, you know, I've met over the years some mums. Now, there may be dads who do this too. I've noticed it in mums, and it's not all mums, and it's not a universal, but I have seen and worked with mums who think that mumming is not really a an important job. Much as they say, oh, it's the most important job, and I believe that it is, you can tell that fundamentally they think they should be successful at business, or they should be whatever it is they trained for or thought that they were training for. My mom was going to be the next Marie Curie. And for a while, having kids seemed like, to her, I know, a waste of her resources. You know, this, you know, it was like, you know, I got my doctorate so that I could change your nappy. No, in fairness, I never got that, right? I didn't grow up with a complex about it. I just know from talking to her that there was a sense of that. And she found a way to go back. She actually became a high school chemistry teacher for over 30 years and a much beloved high school chemistry teacher who still has students who come out to see her and visit her and are still a part of her life. But sometimes what happens is a mom will create a role for herself. And actually, I'm going to stop saying a mom because it could be either parent. But a parent will create a role for themselves as a parent that's, this, I have to help them with their homework and I have to do this and I have to do that. And while it's true, those things might be on their activity list, they create a lot of drama around it to justify that they're just a parent. Now, I've got to tell you, if you're a parent, you're not just a parent. I'm sure at some level you know that, but it really is true. But if you don't feel that, if you've got a lot of thinking about, I should be doing something more important, one of the ways that people deal with that is by creating a lot of drama about their parenting. Now, I didn't hear that in Laura. What I heard is a woman who loves her son and really wants the best for him. But it looked to her at the beginning of the call that the best for him was the activity, was ticking everything off the to-do list. Okay, we got our list. We've done this. We've got our financial applications. We've done this. We've got our trip. We've done this. Okay, I've done the best. And began to see over the course of our conversation that actually a huge part, I would say by far the larger part of how she could support her son was to be a resource for him, to let him know that it was okay, to not contribute to his stressful thinking and his sense of pressure, but to actually be a place where he could put that down and she could put that down and they could actually probably have a very deep experience of going through this together. Now, that's true regardless of what you do, right? That's true at work. That's true at home. That's true in anything. We can take anything on as a huge responsibility and it's all on us. And sometimes we do that to make ourselves feel worthwhile. And sometimes it really just looks like that to us. Or we can come to anything clean. We really can do great business without bringing a lot of busyness to it. How does that happen? How do you do that? Well, I can't give you a formula, but I can give you some of the elements that are going to allow you to experience things more in that way and to see things just with more clarity. And the number one thing, I was talking with a client about this morning, the number one thing is to settle down. Well, what does that mean? Well, you know how, you know, if there's a lot of wind on a body of water, the surface of the water will be all crazy. And when the water settles down, when the wind dies down, there's a calm, there's a solidity. The surface becomes such that it can almost hold things up, like it can support them. The surface tension is maximized. Use a little bit of my high school physics. Well, our minds work kind of like that. That the more all up in our heads we are, and the more everything's spinning around, and the more we try and put a put a thought that we actually want to think about, put a task that we actually want to work on in the midst of all that noise, and there's no surface tension to hold it up. But as we settle down in our thinking, water's naturally buoyant. The mind is naturally buoyant, and it will support whatever thought we want to focus on, whatever task we want to put our energy into. Now, it's not always up to us whether we have a quiet mind, but it is something we can encourage in ourselves. It is something we can orient ourselves towards. It is a direction we can look in. Operating with a quieter mind, operating from a more settled down place inside ourselves. And when we do that, it's like turning the thermostat. When you turn the thermostat in your house, whether you're, you know, here in LA with us, where we're all in 100 degree weather and we're pretty much all turning the thermostat down, or you're somewhere where it's colder and you're turning the thermostat up, that's kind of your part, is turning the thermostat. The system takes care of the rest. Well, we work kind of like that. Not exactly like that, but kind of like that. When we turn our thermostat towards reflective, towards quieter, towards settling down, that naturally orients the whole system towards that. And it starts to happen more and more. But if we don't see the value of a settled down mind, if we think we do better when we're hyped up, if we think we do better when we're driving ourselves and everyone around us crazy, well, we'll get more of that. It's a funny thing. I haven't actually asked a client this in a few years, but I used to often ask my clients, if I could wave a magic wand and you would lose the ability to worry, would you want me to wave the magic wand? And even the clients with the most anxiety would hesitate, they'd equivocate, they'd hem and haw, and they'd say, no, but I'd love to be able to turn it down. Because at some level, they really thought there was a value in being riled up about something, in worrying a thought around in your mind, in ruminating on something, that in some way that would keep them safe, that in some way that would prepare them better, that in some way that would keep harm from befalling them. And my experience is, worry is superstition. Worry is no more effective in keeping you safe than the old joke. And this one, if you listen to the show at all, I probably tell this one way too much, but there's a guy standing on a street corner, right? Standing on a street corner in London, and he's swinging a tiger by its tail. And, you know, tourists and locals come up to him, you know, they're all kind of a little scared, but finally a London bobby comes up to him and goes, what are you doing? And the guy goes, I'm keeping away the lions. And the policeman says, well, there are no lions in London. And the guy spinning the tiger by its tail goes, see, it's working. Right? That's superstition. We make a false causality between our worry and nothing bad happening. And then if something bad does happen, we didn't worry enough, or we didn't worry in the right way, or we worried about the wrong thing. Well, the truth is, there is no connection, at least no connection I have ever seen, between worry and security. In fact, they're opposites. Security is what's there when we're not caught up in worry, when we're not caught up in our insecure thinking. So if you start to see, actually, one of my colleagues had a nice way of putting it. He said, to say I'm worrying less is a bit like saying I'm stabbing myself in the arm with a fork less. It's great. We're happy for you. But why are you stabbing yourself in the arm with a fork at all? And the only answer, one of two answers, the usual answer is because at some level, stabbing ourselves in the arm with a fork seems like a good idea. And at some level, being busy seems like a good idea to a lot of us. Maybe it's a good idea because we think it makes us seem important to ourselves or important to others. Maybe we think it's a good idea because if people think we're busy, they won't bother us. Maybe we think it's a good idea because if people think we're busy, we can charge more for what we do, right? I've actually seen that taught as a business strategy, is fill out your diary with fake appointments so that people will think that you're in demand. Now, whatever your reason, as long as you think busyness and being crazy and go, oh man, I got so much on, and everyone goes, oh, right? As long as that looks like a good idea to us, we're setting the thermostat to busy. So we're going to get more busyness. When you start to see that busyness it's the exact opposite direction. It would be like turning up the heat. It's 100 degrees here. If I don't understand the thermostat and I turn it up, that's not going to get me what I want. But if I can see that what I want is in the opposite direction, what I want is less busyness. What I want is to experience less pressure and less stress in the midst of the same circumstances. Because only when I can see those circumstances clean and not through the filter of needing relief from the pressure and stress and busyness that I feel, will I actually be able to evaluate whether or not I have too much on, or it's just a case I have too much on my mind. And that's really sort of, if I was going to offer you one takeaway from today, it would really be to look in that direction and to just see for yourself, does busyness look like a good idea to me? And can I see beyond that? Can I open myself up to a different possibility and see that it's not only possible to do good business without busyness, but actually it's the path. It's not just the end, it's the means. That the less I busy myself with things, the better business I can do. I'm going to try and sneak in one more call. Let's talk to Adam. Adam, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
I really enjoy your perspective and agree with you completely. And have many times found myself in that situation where I can appreciate how much more enjoyable and successful it is to make decisions with less on your mind. However, there's many times when you have a business that you have responsibilities and obligations, and even though you want to lessen your load, it seems really impossible to do that. So I was just curious what your thoughts were when you're in that situation, how you can sort of maintain your sense of well-being in spite of all the demands that are being placed upon you.
So that's actually, that's a great example, and I'm going to have to be awfully concise because we've got about a minute left. So thank you for phoning, Adam. I'll do my best. So basically, I said there were two things, and I talked about settling down. The other thing is seeing that perception is projection, that the mind is a projector, not a camera, and that the way it looks to you, even though it looks really, really real, is actually an effect of thought. It's not a real thing that thought is interpreting. And so when you look out into the world and you see, man, this is desperate, this is important, this is, you know, I've got all these obligations I've got to meet, how can I stay calm even when that's going on? Well, where the calm comes from is two places. Firstly, you see that obligation exists in your mind, not in the world. That having to get everything done on time is an agreement that you can meet, negotiate, or fail to meet, not a demand from God. That the feeling of obligation comes from within your own thinking, and that there is an intelligence available to you from behind the mind that will guide you when you get your own thinking out of the way. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show today. Again, we've actually apparently got over 88 people already signed up for a taste of Supercoach Academy. You can go to supercoachacademy.com/taste to add your name to that list. Until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.